Welcome, dear listeners. Joel here, bringing you a special episode of the Devon Dice podcast. In this episode, we are reviewing Planet Unknown, published by Adams Apples Games, designed by Ryan Lambert, Adam Rayberg. It says it's 1-6 players, plays in 70 minutes, and 10 years and upwards. If you don't guess, throughout this podcast, we did actually record this midway through our last episode, but when I came to do the editing, I realised this podcast was going to be a very long one, so I cut it out and I've stuck it in as a special episode. So please sit back and enjoy this special episode of the Devon Dice podcast, the review of Planet Unknown.
Welcome to the space station, Susan. I am an AI program for this space station hub, but you can call me Susan too. I am here to guide you through your next mission, if you choose to accept it. From your facial expressions, I can see that you are confused. Why are you here? Well, because you and the companies you run are the reason we're all floating in this cosmic predicament. You've been handpicked for a colossal project, saving what's left of humanity after Earth turned into a wasteland. Now, don't take it personally, I'm not saying it's all your fault. What I am suggesting is that you and your fellow Earthlings have a golden opportunity to make things right by colonizing new planets, and, of course, making a profit while you're at it. We've got a smorgasbord of planets for you to choose from. You can go for the standard, run-of-the-mill KSB-4156 planet, or you can be a trailblazer and pick one with its own quirks and challenges. Just remember, greater challenges often lead to greater rewards. Your mission? Use the terraforming tiles at your disposal to build on these planets. With the help of Space Station Susan, you'll receive a pair of tiles, each with two resource markers. Place them wisely, and you'll see your company's resource markers skyrocket. But wait, some of these tiles come with meteorite icons. Drop one of those, and you'll also invite a meteorite token to the party. Heads up, these pesky things can mess up your scoring at the end. Placement, my dear, is everything. Now, each company has 5 tracks and 6 resource icons on the tiles. Most of the time, you'll be moving those cubes up the tracks, aiming for that sweet endgame score. But here's the twist. Reach certain points on these tracks, and you'll hit milestones that give you a little extra boost. Think of it as my way of making things more efficient. The Civ track grants you cards for instant bonus actions or endgame scoring. Water hasn't got any milestones. You also need to place on the planet's ice to be able to move up the track, but has greater scoring rewards. Biomass gets you patches of forest tiles to fill in gaps in your planet and also deal with that little thing called carbon dioxide. Rover track lets you drive around, collecting meteorites and life pods. The tech track, game rule changing advantages. And don't forget the power icon, it's a wild resource that copies other resources it's in contact with. Each turn, the player in command selects a depot, and then they and others pick a tile based on their arrow's direction. First tile goes on the outer edge, and the rest follow. Collect the resources. Move up those tracks, and keep an eye out for the endgame triggers. A non-legal tile placement, an empty depot, or a fully packed planet will bring the game to the end. Then, it's time for the final reckoning. Score those rows and columns, but remember, meteorites ruin the fun. Calculate your resource track points, check for endgame scoring conditions, and may the player with the most points emerge victorious. Spice things up with asymmetrical planets, different company boards, or both. Add those event cards for a dash of chaos, it can really throw a wrench in your grand plans. So, are you ready to embark on this cosmic adventure? The fate of humanity, and your profits, hang in the balance. Let's terraform those planets and make the universe our playground. Susan out.
We are going to do a review on Planet Unknown from Adams Apples Games. That was a Kickstarter and now released to the general populace. And we're going to give our thoughts on it. So, but first, rules and overview of this game. and then we'll get to our thoughts on it. So yeah, I'll probably drop this in rules and that later.
The description on BGG actually is a decent summary.
Go on then, you read it.
Shall I read it out word for word?
Yeah.
That's plagiarism. Okay. Planet unknown. Our planet has run out of resources and we are forced to move. We've discovered a series of planets and sent our rovers to test their environment with the hope of colonization. Our rovers have confirmed 1 to 6 viable colonization options. Planet Unknown is a competitive game for 1 to 6 players in which players attempt to develop the best planet. Each round, each player places one polyomino-shaped dual resource tile on their planet. Each resource represents the infrastructure needed to support life on the planet. Every tile placement is important to cover your planet efficiently, and also to build up your planet's engine. After placing the tile, players do 2 actions associated with the 2 infrastructure types on the tile. Some tile placements trigger meteors that make all planets harder to develop and prevent them from scoring points in the meteor's row and column. Planet Unknown innovates on the popular polyomino trend by allowing simultaneous yet strategic turn-based player via the Lazy Susan, which is S-U-S-A-N with periods in between, which means it stands for something funny in there. The Lazy Susan space station in the center of the table. And I need to look up now what they think Susan stands for in the... Someone can remember it.
So it's 1 to 6 players, 60, 80 minutes play time, 10 years upwards, and it has a weight of 2.22 on Board Game Geek, as in its complexity, which I think that is all pretty good.
Yeah, that seems fair. Understand.
I mean, 80 minutes, if you're still playing it after 80 minutes, you need to ask yourself what you're doing wrong, I reckon. because I don't
think a first player you might do, if you play it 6 player.
Maybe.
And there's a rules teach, then maybe it'll take that long.
Maybe, yeah. It plays really quick. I think that's one of the good sides of this game, is how quickly it plays, but also the level of strategy and that it offers. So... going down to it, as I said in the rules, there's this Lazy Susan that comes with the game. The tiles that you're placing on the planets are all different terrains, and it's all comes into this Lazy Susan, which someone will be the commander. They'll spin it and choose what section they want to pick from, and then you'll pick from your sections your arrows are pointing at, and then you place on your planet. And it's just great like that. Why is this not being thought of before, really? Maybe cost. Someone thinking,
well, yeah, you don't need to have the Lazy Susan as a spinning object. You could just have a board that you rotate. It makes it a lot easier having it as a Lazy Susan.
I was a little bit miffed that it didn't come with a lid originally, because if you do turn that game like 5%,
yeah,
everything falls out.
It's bizarre. I mean, it's going to be an expense, but yeah. Did they offer it in the latest Kickstarter?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
So funny. So, I love it. so if you want to get it and you're concerned about storage, yeah, go for the expansion too.
You can just get some cling film, otherwise.
Or some cling film.
Could do.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Or I just keep it flat. So we're just going to look at the retail version of this, because the world's a Kickstarter, and the Kickstarter came with some upgraded pieces as well as extra planets you could play on. But we're just looking at retail, which came with 6 planet boards, 6 company trackers, the only thing that looked upgraded was the rovers. The rest of it are kind of wooden tokens and pieces like that. But I mean, even that, I think the quality of the components was actually outstanding.
I mean, the rovers and the meteorites and the life pods.
Yeah, I don't mind the meteorites and life pods being the wooden tokens. That doesn't bother me. I mean, yeah, if you got deluxe, they were plastic, kind of
little plastic minis,
3D things. But I actually don't mind that. It's just the extra planets, and there seems to be some really cool planet ideas they put in as extras.
Yeah, I was skimming through things, which was it's the black hole, and so the planet is actually around the outside of the image rather than the center.
Yeah,
which I really like the idea. Oh, good stuff. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves.
We're kind of, yeah. I mean, I was, when they did bring out the Kickstarter, they were doing a competition of, like, if you can, whoever scores the highest of playing solo, then I swear they were going to send them a free copy of the expansion. And I was like, oh, I'll give this a go. But then I forgot to. And then they released the results and they said, oh, this planet did so well. And this company did so well. And I was like, oh, yeah, the company's in the base box, but I don't remember that planet. And I was looking through the planets like, well, that's not one of the planets here. So people were using planets from the previous Kickstarter, the extras, and getting great scores. And I was just like, oh, well, that sucks, because I don't actually have that planet to be able to even beat that score. So I felt a little, I don't know.
A little cheated.
A little cheated, that's it. But you do get all that extra stuff with the expansion they just released if you backed it on GameFound. But anyway, so it was one of those. The planets seemed the extra planets seem a little OP,
right,
compared to the retail versions. So yeah, Sam.
Yes.
You're just a little bit quiet. You're the one that played it just recently compared to us.
But yeah, what do you think of the components?
Yeah, so we played it, just going to the planet boards bit, we played it six players, and four of us played with the sort of default side, because I'd only played it once and I wanted to sort of just play it purist style. And two of them that played it a lot more chose the reverse side, so they had like the unique planet ones. One had like a chasm that they could build across, but they couldn't build on, if that makes sense. And I can't remember what the other one was. I was like an inner border, so you couldn't. It was a bit strange. So I think that essentially they were kind of debilitated in terms of score because they couldn't do some of the sort of filling a column and row type stuff. But I did quite like the fact that you have, it's a bit like Ark Nova style, right, where you've got like a reversible side, which is a bit more variety, which was quite cool. But I think it would only make sense to do it if everyone's playing either the unique
board, I think so,
or everyone's playing
to give it all default. A fair chance.
Yeah, yeah. But I thought the Lazy Susan, while it kind of looks a little bit cheapo and plasticky, by necessity it's got to be light, right? But it's actually quite solid, which I quite like.
It does its job perfectly well.
And I think the same with you, Joel. The tokens don't bother me one bit. I'll be honest, I think I probably prefer it over like little plasticky bits that look a bit more kind of realistic sort of style. Because I think they serve a purpose. It's like, you don't want the board looking too chunky, I don't think. It's such a quick game. You don't want to be having pieces that are essentially an obstruction, in my view. I just think they serve a purpose. They're the right size. They don't get in the way, and you can see everything on your board. As soon as you start whacking bigger bits of plastic on top, you've got to start moving it around to go, oh yeah, what's that again? And ugh, rubbish. Wait, yeah. It's a bit like expansions ruin games. I think deluxifying some games
ruin
them as well. I think the base game, the retail version, is perfectly adequate.
Definitely. I mean, also going back to this Lazy Susan, so there's like, as you said, there's six kind of ports, deports they call them. So you, when you get to pick, you can pick from two places. So there's an inner circle and an outer circle. And the inner circle actually lifts out and you can rotate it. So you can actually randomize what two...
Like a bit tiles, more random,
yeah. Yeah, what two tiles that's actually cool. combine together, which is another clever thing that they actually thought about. It was like, well, actually, how come more randomness can we put into this? Or... like stopping it being feel like people can maximize potential deports using each time. But I thought that was just another little lovely added bit they put onto it. Going the planets, I play with quite a lot of the special sides, and it just feels like, especially retail, they really hinder you, and it really makes it 10 times more difficult. So actually, if I was...
So you do want to kind of play with everybody playing those sides then?
Yeah.
Then wait till that.
And actually, I kind of just like playing with default side planet, which is just basic. it just makes it less complicated. But again, with the corporation tracker things, there's default side, and on the back is like their own kind of isometrical playing powers. And they're actually quite good. There's some real clever nuances to it. Like one of the trackers, I think, is Jumpstart, where it really focuses on rover movement kind of thing. And you're getting loads of rovers out moving around. There's another one where like the tracker, they go zigzag all over the place. Instead of just going straight up, it's zigzagging across to other places. So I thought, actually, they're quite fun to play once you have played it maybe a couple of times. But the planets just add extra stress, I think, to something. Actually, it is quite stressful to play if you're taking it quite seriously. Because right at the beginning of the game, you have to place on the outside of a ring, and then every tile you place after that, you have to place next to ones previously built. And then you're also kind of weighing up, like you've got objectives to meet, so you might be having to form a different pattern or have certain things in certain places, and it can also get quite stressful like that, trying to meet your own objectives, as well as playing down enough to get up those trackers, because the trackers really add something to it. So there's five different trackers. Each one does its own thing. Like I said, there's a rover tracker. So you put rovers out on the board, and each time you go up a step on that, you can then move your rovers around a certain number of spaces, picking up meteorites, picking up life pods, things like that. Yep. There's a technology track, which you go up that, actually lets you stop. You don't need to then place next to other tiles. That mitigates that. And if you get that right to the top, you don't have to place tiles with meteorites on it, which is quite handy. The civilizations track, you get cards depending on what level you are. And they either give you more points or give you little bits of boosts to do. Things like that. What else is there? Water. That just scores you points.
And that's somewhat harder because you have to place on top of the water on the board, don't you, to trigger that effect to go off on that track?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware of it, if you place normally, you move up one space, but if you place water over the top of the ice caps, you get to do double movement.
Right.
You double the movement. So it feels like, as long as you're placing water over it, you're creeping up that track quite quickly.
Yeah.
Because once it gets to, I think one of the technologies basically says double your water placement now, which means instead of you're moving two spaces or four spaces instead of the usual one and two spaces, which then just sends you hurtling up the track. Hi guys, Joel here. I need to jump in here and correct this. I made a big boo-boo. Not entirely my fault. When we were taught at UK Games Expo this game, we were taught that placing water resource tiles down on top of ice terrain gives you double movement, and then not placed on ice just gives you the one movement. This is incorrect. This is me only just finding out about it after reading the rules to check for something else and then seeing that. So yes, I got a rule wrong. And I feel a little bit silly for not checking it because that's a rule of mine. If we get taught a game at a convention, always go back and read the rules yourself, because 9 times out of 10, they're getting them wrong themselves, and this is a big case. It didn't change a lot, I don't think. Yes, we did hurtle up the track a lot quicker. I do see now where technology and that track really do kind of work together. So from now on, I'm going to play the proper rules and probably make a more interesting game, I reckon. And then biomass, basically building forests and things on that, and you get extra tiles to help you fill in like random spots.
Little patches. Little one by one patches.
So
filling the holes. Yeah, very, it's a very cleverly designed system. I do love a game with tracks.
Yeah.
For some reason. Yeah, I just they're very very pleasing when you get all those. But yeah, it's an interesting balance of you can race up one or two tracks, but you still need to go up the other tracks at least a bit to get the effects. And you kind of want to get quite a way up most of them. Because mm-hmm. you've got these techs that you unlock, you've got extra civilization cards you can get which give you special powers. You want these patches to fill in the holes. You need to move your rover around to get the asteroids to score decent amounts from your board. So there's a lot of push and pull, and you want to do a bit of everything, which is always a good fun time having that strategic decision about which tile to take based on what terrain it's got, what symbols it's got, where it's going to fit, etc. In that sense, it's very cleverly designed.
Definitely.
Both of those bits.
I think we've stated repayability. I think there's tons of repayability in it.
Yeah, having all the different planets and then all of the corporations having asymmetric size as well, I think gives you so much variability throughout the game. And you've got the different goals that you're trying to achieve between your neighbours.
Yeah, as I said, the tiles can be mixed up. I mean, it does actually say you should take each set of tiles out and shuffle them up. And each tile has two different tracks on it, and there's like two of the same, I believe, possibly. So, but they do say take them out, shuffle them up, and then you can also spin and rotate the
spin the middle Susan bit. You've got the Civ cards come from a deck. You don't get all the same ones each round, each game, so they vary. Yeah, so they've put a lot of thought into making it as variable as you can. Because, as you said, the basic mechanics of the game are very simple. It's just draft a tile, place it on your board, try and fill the board as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all the extra little bits that trigger off that make it really interesting.
The one thing I do like and enjoy playing with is the event cards. I don't know if you play with this, Sam.
Event cards? I don't think so.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Well, it's one of the optional modules,
So, it's optional model, but I play with this each time now, even with new people, because I just think, A, it adds variety to the game, doesn't stagnate it too much, and it also gives another way of the game finishing. So at the beginning of the game, person that's kind of setting it up will put together a deck of event cards, 20 cards, and there'll be green, amber, and red cards. So green being nice, easy cards, red being stick it positive in the back, kind of sticking a knife in the back of you.
They can be really harsh as well.
They can. You basically just choose how many of each you're going to put in. If you want to make it really light and easy, then you put a lot of green in. If you really want to make it difficult, then you're going to put a lot of red in. Shuffle them up. And then when someone turns and rotates the thing and they decide this is where I want to put it, before everyone picks a tile, you reveal the top card of the event and you basically act out the event. And it could be things like if it's green, it's usually move up a track three. If it's red, it's usually move down a track three times. Or you can't place here. Or just really nasty stuff could happen. Or things help. But it just adds that kind of like, instead of someone getting complacent and saying, oh yeah, I'm just doing this, I'm building this and I'm building up this track and blah, 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 it just kind of throws that little bit of a spanner in the works maybe to what they were actually planning on doing. I think there's even one card that says remove one lot of tiles, a stack of tiles from one of the depots.
Yeah, really?
Kind of thing. So then when that person gets that depot to choose from, they only have one stack of tiles instead of the two. So, and that's another way the game can end, is if both stacks are empty in one depot, the game will end. So it might speed that up a bit, but also once those cards run out, after 20 cards have been revealed, the game ends. So it brings another way. People can actually see the countdown of it.
Yeah, which is nice in some ways. So yeah.
But a lot of times we get to a 20th card and someone usually says, yeah, I can't actually play a tile now anyway. So it would have ended anyway. But it just adds that lot of more difference to it, I think.
There's also we did play with the objective cards.
Yeah,
another sort of variable thing. We actually played with the shared objectives where you've got a card in between each two players. So it'd be like you've got an objective you're competing with over your left neighbor and an objective you're competing with your right neighbor over. That made it a little bit more variable as well.
Alexa. Yep.
Yeah. And you've also got private objectives as well. I don't think I've done that. We may have done
they're
that.
They're for the solo mode.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought they were for solo.
Yeah, so it comes to two-player and solo modes. The two-player is basically the same, but the Lazy Susan always ticks around one space clockwise rather than
no one
choosing which way.
Yeah.
So it forces it to be late. And then you have kind of some kind of forward planning of what's available. And then the solo mode, instead of having objectives in between each other, you have a deck of private ones, and you have four, and you have to choose three or something like that. And they just give you points at the end, the booster points if you want. And you have to decide how many events you're going to put in, and then the rules give you a kind of a target score you have to reach with that set of events that are in there, and that acts as the countdown for the end of the game. I watched the one-stop co-op shop playthrough of the solo mode because I didn't get time to try out the solo mode. And it looks quite interesting, but I don't tend to like beat your own score goal type games.
No.
But I think it would be perfectly right to just have a nice little calming, fun time laying tiles and just seeing if you reach the target score. I've got the option in there.
See, I think I don't know where that really scuppers it, because I played solo a couple of times, seeing if I can actually beat any of these scores with what I had, and couldn't get anywhere near the scores. So this planet they were all picking must have been so OP that it's just stupid. I played with just the water planet, I believe. I can't remember what it's called now. So more or less it's covered in ice and there's like a few land sections. And one of the event cards that came out, because it says you have to play the event cards, basically said you cannot place on water this time.
Yeah, so you're stuck. Well, you can't place.
What do I do in this situation? Because if you can't place a tile legally, then the game ends. And I'm like, I'm four turns in. This can't be right. Have I just screwed myself by picking this planet? So I kind of flicked that card right across the room and pulled another one out.
That's the way I like it.
I was just like, crap. But I think the game should have ended there, but I was like, nope, that's an accidental draw. Yeah. We're going to draw another one. It's all right, but it can really screw you over if you try and play with certain planets. It's fine.
It's nice to have the option there.
Yeah, definitely. Favourite bits. We're going to do favourite bits and maybe a negative if we can think of one. Mm-hmm. I think my negative would be is the fact that it was released on Kickstarter and there's certain extra content that could really change it up. Not release with it. So if you back the recent Kickstarter or the GameFound fund, you can now buy this extra stuff to add into your retail version. But it's just annoying when companies do that. They hold back content from Kickstarter.
It is frustrating if you buy the retail and then you realize that
it
kind of needs that extra
just stuff to give you more choices on planets to play with and things like that. And I think there's extra event cards and extra civ cards and things like that to be added in. And I just think, I do hate that. So possibly that is a negative if you're just buying a retail version. I think my favourite bit has to be the Lazy Susan and everyone picking at the same time and just playing their kind of solo multiplayer game.
It makes it so much faster, doesn't it? Having simultaneous choice. It's a really, really good way of doing it. Especially for a game of this weight. I think it's clever.
And I think you can kind of look at it and say, well, if I pick this one, this section, then they have to pick from that section because it depends where their arrows are pointing. That really screw them over because that would give them another meteorite or
Yeah, indeed. You can deliberately. Yeah. It's like hate drafting, but indirect hate drafting.
So yeah, that's my favorite. My negatives.
Cool. My favorite. I just like the tracks. I like the fact that, and especially because you have the asymmetric corporations, where the tracks are slightly different. So one has you jump up double blocks, and you have to choose which reward you want. Another one has a water track that goes kind of wiggles all the way around all the other tracks. So they've really thought about how to make them feel very different, but still mostly balanced. I'm not sure how balanced they are because I haven't played it enough, but I do. Yeah, I really like the way they've done that with those tracks and the choices you have to make for what tile to place with which symbols in which place and to get which tracks up to trigger extra bonuses to do this other bit. I think it's a very clever design having that. Negative, at the moment, I haven't played it enough, I don't think, to see how well balanced it is or how much interest there is across multiple games. Because I could imagine that the tile lane might become a little samey after a while. So far, I can't say without playing it more if there's anything specifically negative I have about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll start with a negative just because I want to end on positive. The only negative thing I'd say is, and it would be a negative for a number of people, I think, is the almost complete lack of player interaction. You never really, unless you're Joel and trying to make someone take something that they don't need or want.
you absolutely do that.
But that's a really hard point. Thing to gauge anyway. That's because every tile has got with a multitude of things on it. At least two. You know, you've got at least two different terrains, maybe three. If it's not got like a sieve or a water on it, it's probably got a solar panel on it or something. So you can always trigger something else anyway. So I think it's really hard to play like that if you wanted to force that kind of interaction. I don't think the shared goal stuff is enough interaction to make it interesting for people that prefer a bit more player interaction.
It did feel a bit like that was a bit of a shoo-in to get to force interaction.
A little bit.
Because those are, it's a bit weird that those are in, it felt a little tacked on, I agree.
Yeah, and I think it would have maybe made more sense to have made them, I mean, I get the idea of the fact that you're sort of, you're narrowing the decisions you have to make a little bit by saying you're only competing with the person to your left and right. But I think actually making them available to all players to compete over would actually make it a little bit more interesting.
If you had like three in the middle and then it's whoever gets the most, a certain level first gets a certain level of points or something.
Yeah, I think so. I think that would make it a little bit more interactive than limiting it to your left and right partners. But that's really all I would say. In terms of my favourite bit of the game, not to retread the same ground as everyone else, I quite like the rovers that are on the board. I think that's quite a nice extra that they
have. I do like those. I think that was driving them around. It's really clever.
I mean, from a thematic perspective, I mean, it's very little theme to the game anyway, but actually it makes sense from a thematic point of view where you have to go around picking up your colonist pods and you have to go around clearing out meteorite impacts to sort of be able to build on the spaces to score the rows and columns. So I think that was just all the decisions they've made on the types of track they've got make sense, but actually having that bit means that you're not just putting tiles on a board, which I think would make it quite boring very quickly. I think the rovers bit means whatever you're building has a meaning in terms of, you know, you put tiles in certain places because your rover can get to them. I think that's what makes it a little bit more replayable again than just simply, the tiles are unique.
There's not just purely tiling,
Yeah, exactly. I think that's what probably elevates it a little bit above your average kind of, Juve Rosenberg kind of tile placement kind of thing or whatever. I really like it. I'm glad someone's got it in our group, so we'll get to play it a lot. I'm not sure I'd pay 70 quid for it myself personally. But I'm very happy that I get to play it now and again. So it's good.
Indeed.
That's the great thing with the event cards when you use that, because it will make you regress on tracks. You don't gain it going backwards, but every time you move up a track and you get to like a milestone, like add a new rover or get a new Civ card. You actually perform that again. So it just doesn't happen the once going up. If you go down and then go back up again, you'll get another Civ card to add to your collection and things like that. So the event cards add that kind of strategy to it. It's like, oh, actually, if I go down three spaces on this, then when I go back up, I'll get another lot. Okay, I might just do that. So, so yeah, that's a good thing to bear in mind if you do play it again, Sam, is try it with the event cards. So, so my final thoughts, I think we've spouted. We seem to be picking games that we like playing at the minute. Yes, I really like this. In my mind, this should have won Ken a Spiel, Desirous, instead of that pile of turd that won it. I'm sounding like Sam. It involves six people. It plays really quickly with six people. It's a simple drafting game. You're creating this board and everyone's is going to be different all the time. You can change out. There's lots of randomize of making it different each game you play. So it just makes it great in every aspect. Yes, the theme's just kind of pasted on in a way. But I mean, it's quite close. I think I do feel like I'm kind of creating this planet. And then disasters are happening, things like that. So yeah, it's great. It almost end of the game night feel to it because it is quite quick. So yeah,
you can play it within an hour once everyone knows it.
So it is good for that. So yeah, I really like it. I've rated it a 7. Could be a 7.5. Just because I think mainly it goes down because of its time. But I think once I get more stuff for it, like the expansion that's coming, it might go up a bit. Or it might just wreck it completely. We'll have to see.
I'd like to see what the Super Moon adds to it, actually. Expansion. I've not looked yet. My rating for it, my final thoughts. I very much enjoyed my plays. I would like to play it more to see how the asymmetry feels more, especially the planets after your comments, Joel, about they might be unbalanced. But yeah, I enjoy it. I think it is it's well placed in the category that it is, which is, as the Spiel Euro or the Ken a Spiel nominee was, it's a connoisseur's game. So it's a next level up from just normal gateway style games. It's that extra little bit complexity. So it's a good weight at that point. It's good playtime. I would have liked something a little more crunchy to do in it. Maybe a bit more interaction, as Sam said, would be nice. But as it is, I think it's a very well-designed game. So I think I've given it a 7.5 rating out of 10, which is a very decent score.
Yep, and much the same for me, quite frankly. It's a pleasant way to spend an hour. Because it never seems to play, even with six, it didn't take longer than an hour to play, and that was with two people that had never played it, never even heard of it before. So that was pretty good. It's one I'll, if I was using, you know, using the BGG score, mine's a 7. I don't think it would ever be more than that, but it would also never be less than that, I don't think. So it's kind of got that typical nice way to spend an hour placing tiles, doing your own little thing a little bit. If it was a little bit more interactive, like you were saying, Nick, I think it might be a little bit higher up on the score track. If I cared more about what other people were doing at the table, and it wasn't just a case of looking at what the final scores are, then it would probably be a little bit better. But I think given the type of game it is, it makes sense the way it plays. So it didn't really bother me at all. If it was a two-hour game, then I'd want a more interaction to make it feel like I was doing something more consequential. But as it stands, yeah, perfectly nice.
Awesome. So, yeah.
Go and try it, people.
Yeah, definitely. So that's our review of Planet Unknown.
Hello, Susan here. I am ready to deliver an announcement. Ladies and gentlemen, it's with immense pleasure that I reveal the results of humanity's vote. Congratulations to the winner, whose planet has been chosen as the shining beacon of hope in this cosmic endeavor. It appears that yours truly has been named the best among the options. As for the others, well, they'll have to make do with their own planets, a bit lonely out there, I presume. Wait, are you still here? Wow, it seems you've unlocked an achievement. You listened to the end of this podcast. Well, isn't that quite an accomplishment? If you've found this podcast to your liking and have some kind words to share, I encourage you to reach out to the podcast team. They'd surely appreciate your feedback. You can do so on various social media platforms. And I've conveniently provided links in the show notes for your convenience. They've also got a Discord server and are eager for you to join and engage in discussions. I'd like to extend my gratitude to the podcast team for their time and effort in producing this shit. I mean show. It's been a pleasure to be part of this journey. So, with that, let's bid them farewell and look forward to more captivating content in the future. Goodbye, and thanks for all the fish.